"Miss Ivins," she said. Viv merely nodded. David held the door for her, and once she was inside and he shut it, she stood waiting for him to pull out a chair for her. He imagined saying, "Is your arm broken?" But there was almost as much feminist power in her expecting his chivalry as there would have been in her not doing so. "I heard you say you were feeling better," she said, opening a folder in her lap and pulling a pencil from behind her ear, "so I won't belabor that. I trust you're able to get past your unfortunate incident with His Excellency." "Throwing up on the leader of the world, you mean?" he said, eliciting a grimace from her. "Except that such news travels fast, and I doubt there's an employee in New Babylon not aware of it. Yes, I try not to dwell on it." "Senior management understands," she said. He wanted to ask if they understood that barfing on the big boss was actually an answer to a desperate prayer to be spared from pretending to worship him. Viv made a tiny check mark after her first listed item. David wondered what she might have written there as the discussion point. Regurgitation? "Now then," she said, "a few more items. First, your new immediate superior will be James Hickman." "My area will report to intelligence?" "No, Jim has been promoted to Supreme Commander to replace Reverend Fortunato." David mused that having had intelligence in Hickman's previous title was similar to Fortunato now having Reverend in his. Surely this was Commander Fortunato's choice, not the potentate's. David detected the hint of a smile, but Viv wouldn't take the bait. "So Jim will be relocating to Leon's old office?" he said. "Please don't get ahead of me, Mr. Hasid, and I would urge you to use titles, or at the very least Mr., when you refer to personnel at such levels. You should be expected to refer to Mr. Hickman as Supreme Commander, and Mr. Fortunato as Reverend or Most High Reverend." "Do I get a vote?" David wondered. He might rather have vomited on Leon than call him Most High anything. He bit his tongue to keep from asking Viv, Miss Ivins, whether it had been Hickman's groveling that won him his promotion, or perhaps that performance was ingratitude for a move that had already been put in place. "And no," Viv continued, "the new Supreme Commander will not be moving into Reverend Fortunato's old office. Mr. Hickman will be sharing space with His Excellency's assistant." "Really?" David said. "Seems Sandra's kind of cramped as it is." "How shall I put this? Though Mr. Hickman will have the same title Mr. Fortunato had, the job may not have quite the same range of influence."
"Meaning?"
Viv appeared frustrated, as if she were seldom asked to be more precise.
"Mr. Hasid, it should be obvious to everyone that a leader whose deity has been publicly affirmed would not have need for the same level of assistance as he may have in the past. Mr. Fortunato was, in essence, the chief operating officer to His Excellency's chief executive officer. Mr. Hickman's role will be more that of facilitator."
"Like sergeant-at-arms or town crier," David wanted to say.
"And, of course, you are aware of Reverend Fortunato's new duties."
"More than you are, but false prophet may not look right on the business card."
"Refresh me." "He will be the spiritual head of the global community, directing homage to the object of our worship."
David nodded. To cover any unconscious look that might have given him away, he said, "And what, is to become of Reverend Fortunato's old office?"
"It will become part of the potentate's new quarters."
"Oh,
I knew he wanted to expand upward, but out as well." "Yes, it should be magnificent. One of the benefits, so far anyway, of his resurrected body is that he is apparently immune to the need for sleep. Busy 24 hours a day, he needs variety in his work environment."
"Aha! That's all he needs, Satan with no downtime."
"The potentate's new office will be spectacular, Director Hasid. It will encompass both his and Mr. Fortunato's old spaces, as well as the conference room, and above the 10-foot walls will extend another 30 feet of windows to a clear roof."
"Sounds impressive, all right."
"I'm sure you will have your share of audiences with him," she said, "though you will more often meet with the new Supreme Commander."
"If I were the potentate, I would want an office large enough to allow plenty of distance between him and me."
"I don't understand."
"You know, the throwing up thing."
"Oh yes, I get it. Amusing."
But she did not appear amused. "Will Mr. Hickman have a meeting area, or will we have to keep our voices down so as not to disturb the potentate's assistant?"
"I'm sure between the two of you you'll be able to work something out. For instance, meeting here. Oh my, look at the time. I have several other appointments, so you'll forgive me if I plunge ahead."
"No, time's up. Get out."
"Certainly, Miss Ivins, I understand." During your incapacity, we were unable to wait on several important issues. We needed to get orders placed for several technical purchases that involve international shipping and manufacture.
David had to concentrate to keep from making a face. He knew exactly what she was talking about, and he had hoped he could stall such requisitions and frustrate the potentate's efforts.
Technical purchases, he said. Biochip injectors. And, of course, loyalty enforcement facilitators.
Loyalty enforcement facilitators? Why not just call them cranium and trunk separators?
Guillotines, you mean?
That made her wince.
Director, please. That has such an 18th century sound to it, and you can understand why we want to avoid any language that bespeaks violence or conjures images of beheading and the like.
And the like?
Begging your pardon, ma'am, but do we not assume that people will recognize the guillotines or loyalty enforcement facilitators for what they are? What else might they be used for, having cabbages?
I don't find that the least bit amusing.
I don't either, but let's call a blade a blade. People see a heavy, angled, razor-sharp edge waiting to be triggered from the top of a groove track with a head-shaped yoke at the bottom over a handy basket, and my guess is they'll have a clue what it's about.
Ms. Ivan shifted in her chair, made another check mark on her list, and said,
I shouldn't put it so crassly. But my guess, no, my sincere belief, is that these will hardly, if ever, be used at all.
You really think so?
Absolutely. They shall merely serve as a tangible symbol for the seriousness of the exercise.
In other words, willingly express your loyalty or we chop your head off.
That will not need to be said.
I should guess not.
But, Mr. Hasid, I wager that only the most unusually hard cases, so few and far between that they will be newsworthy for their uniqueness, will result in complete consummation of the enforcement.
I'd hate to see incomplete consummation of the enforcement. You're confident, then, that all opposition has been eradicated?
Of course, she said. Who in their right mind could see the resurrection of a man dead 3 days and not believe in him as God?
Rayford did not get the reception he expected, and Chloe hurried to him to explain it. He was staggered by the news of Annie. The three sat, stunned as the rest, and most, it appeared, avoided eye contact with Hattie.
What do we hear from David? Rayford said. Is he all right?
We heard from Mac, Buck said. Worse is that David collapsed from heat exhaustion or sunstroke or something, and that just delayed his finding out about Annie.
Rayford sat, shaking his head. He knew more and more of this would be their lot, but it never seemed to get easier.
Not everybody knows everyone else here, he said finally, and made cursory, subdued introductions.
Excuse me, Zeke said, but is it okay if I ask a dumb question?
Anything, Rayford said.
No offense, lady, he said to Hattie, but I didn't expect to see a mark on you.
Tsion stood, lips trembling, and approached her.
Is it true, dear one? He said, putting his hands on her shoulders. Let me look at you.
Hattie nodded, her eyes darting to Buck and Chloe, who stared wide-eyed.
Tsion embraced her, weeping.
Praise God, he said. Lord, you take one away and send one anew.
He opened his eyes.
So tell us, when, how, what happened?
Not 24 hours ago, she said. It wasn't just one thing, but all of you, caring about me, loving me, pleading with me, praying for me. If you have not heard Albie's story, though, make sure you do soon.
She leaned close and whispered in Sion's ear.
Certainly, he said. Chaim, Zeke, Albie, Leah, let's let our new sister have a few moments with the Steele family, shall we? There will be plenty of time for getting acquainted.
The others rose and followed Sion as if they understood, though Zeke looked puzzled. When it was just the four of them, Hattie stood as Rayford, Buck, and Chloe sat.
I'm so happy for you, Chloe said. And I mean it even if I sound stunned. I am. I wish you'd told me on the phone before I went off on you.
No, Chloe, I deserve that. And I don't blame any of you for being shocked. I'm a little shocked myself. But I have so much to explain. Well, not to explain, because who can explain rottenness, but to apologize for it. I was so awful to you, all of you, at different times. I don't know how you could ever forgive me.
Hattie, Chloe said, it's all right. You don't have to. Yes, I do. And Chloe, one thing you need to know is that something you said to me a long time ago never left me. I couldn't get it out of my mind, though I tried over and over.
It was when I visited you at Loretta's house and I accused you all of just trying to change my mind about an abortion and of only really loving me if I bought into the whole package and agreed with everything you said, remember?
Chloe nodded. Hattie continued.
Even though you were so much younger than me, you told me that you all wanted to love me the way God loved me, and that was whether I agreed with you or not. No matter what I did or what I decided, you would love me because that was the way God loved you, even when you were dead in your sins.
I don't remember being that articulate, Chloe said, her eyes filling.
Well, Hattie said, you were right. God loved me at my lowest, and to think I almost killed myself before he finally got to me.
They don't know that story, Rayford reminded her. And she told them everything, from the time the GC in Colorado apprehended her to that very moment.
I was so worried that you would never forgive me, she concluded.
Chloe stood to embrace her, then Buck did. You've never forgiven me for something that was worse than anything you ever pulled, Hattie.
What?
I introduced you to Nikolai Carpathia. She nodded, smiling through tears.
That was pretty bad, she said. But how could you know? He fooled almost everybody at first. I wish I'd never laid eyes on him, but I also wouldn't trade a thing about my life now. It all pointed to today.
David was antsy. He wanted Viv Ivins to leave so he could get started on his real chores. She rattled on about Fortunato.
He'll move into Peter Matthews' old office, but nothing will be the same there. There's no Enigma Babylon One World Faith anymore, because there's no Enigma. We know whom to worship now, don't we, Mr. Hasid?
We sure do, he said.
Now, she said, there is one more item. You're aware that you lost an employee the other day?
She flipped a page in her notebook and read, Single, white, female, 22, almost 23, Angel Rich Christopher.
Rich is apparently a family name.
David held his breath and nodded.
Lightning victim, Viv added. One of several.
I was aware of that, yes.
I just wanted to tell you that if you are planning any sort of memorial, I'd advise against it.
I'm sorry?
We have simply lost too many employees to make it practical to give them all their moments, if you will.
David was offended, especially for Annie.
I have attended other such ceremonies. They have been short, but appropriate.
Well, this one would not be appropriate.
Understood.
No.
No?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Why would it not be appropriate to remember a co-worker who, if you would think about it for just a moment, you would likely understand?
Save me the time, please.
Well, Mr. Hasid, Miss Christopher was apparently struck by lightning when the now Reverend Fortunato was calling down fire from heaven on those who refused to recognize His Excellency the Potentate as the true and living God.
You're saying her death proves she was subversive, that Fortunato killed her?
God killed her, Director. Call it subversive or whatever you will. It is obvious to all who were present, and I know you were, that only skeptics suffered for their unbelief that day.
David pursed his lips and scratched his head.
If we are not memorializing employees who did not recognize Nikolai Carpathia as deity, I understand and will comply.
I thought you would, sir.
She rose and waited for David to open the door for her.
Good day to you, Director. You know I am always available should you need anything at all.
Well, there is one more thing.
Name it?
The biochip injectors you mentioned. Are they similar to the type used for inserting the same into household pets?
I believe they are, with certain modifications.
One of the nurses who attended me happened to mention that she got her start in medicine as a veterinarian assistant. I wonder if she has any experience with that kind of technology that might be helpful to us.
Good thinking. Give me her name and I'll check it out.
I don't recall offhand, he said. But it should be easy enough to find out. I'll call you with it.
As soon as Viv was gone, David phoned Hannah. I'll be giving your name to Viv Ivins. Expect a call.
Got it.
He told her of the prohibition against even a moment of silence in his department for Annie.
That's perfect, she said. David, she would wear that like a badge of honor.
If being honored made it appear she was a Carpathia loyalist, you'd have to answer to her in heaven someday. Chapter 11. For the next several days in the safe house, Rayford quietly observed the group dynamics and took notes. Tzion and Chaim spent most of their time studying. Leah seemed bored with helping Chloe with the international co-op,
and while she got acquainted with Hattie, Hattie was getting on everyone's nerves. Everyone's except Zeke's. He mostly kept to himself and didn't appear affected by personal idiosyncrasies. Rayford asked Sion to lead the group in a brief Bible study each day, and they prayed together. Everyone was also expected to log on to Sion's daily cyber message. Each took a turn spray-painting the insides of exposed windows until all the floors they were using were invisible to the outside, even with lights on. A week after Rayford had brought Hattie into the safe house, he called a meeting to officially insert Chaim, Zeke, Albie, and Hattie into the Tribulation Force. They watched the internet and television for information on when and how the Mark of Loyalty would be administered. And Buck was back in full swing with his The Truth cyberzine. With his international contacts and his ability to write stories that had a ring of authenticity without exposing believers in high places, Buck's was the most popular site on the net, except for Tzion's. Through contacts Chloe lined up in the co-op, Buck enlisted underground printers all over the world who risked their lives publishing The Truth and Tzion's messages for those without access to computers. Hattie evolved from a hesitant newcomer to the vivacious, excited believer she had been that first morning in Bozeman. Rayford enjoyed her spirit, and it seemed Sion did, too. The other's eyes seemed to glaze over each time she exulted over something anew. Something had to give. The Trib Force had plenty of space and privacy, but even in a massive skyscraper, cabin fever set in. Fresh air was a problem. The building ventilation system worked fine, but other than the occasional slightly opened window that brought in crisp fall breezes, everyone longed for time outdoors in the daylight. Too risky, Rayford told them, and even Kenny Bruce was taken out only after dark. One by one, his comrades came to Rayford in private, and while they carefully avoided bad-mouthing each other, all had similar requests. Each wanted an assignment, something away from the safe house. They wanted to be proactive, not waiting for Nikolai and the GC to be the only ones on the offensive. All but Zeke, that is, who seemed content with his role. He inventoried the tools and supplies necessary to outfit the best forgery and phony identification operation possible. I'm not a book-reading kind of a guy, he told Rayford, but I can see what's coming. You can? Zeke nodded. Dr. Ben Judah is training Chaim, what's-his-name, to go back to Israel. That means I gotta work on a new ID for him, and not just on paper. He's gotta look like somebody else, because everybody knows him all over the world. Rayford could only nod. You can't change a guy's height and weight, and I'm no plastic surgeon, but there's things you can do. He's got that Einstein hair thing going now, and he shaves. I'd bald him and dye his eyebrows dark, then have him grow a big bushy beard or maybe mutton chops and a mustache and make them dark too. He'll look younger and kinda hip, but mostly he won't look like himself. We gotta get rid of the glasses or change him drastically. Then I'd give him colored contacts. If he can get along without a prescription, I got plenty he can choose from. Aha, Rayford said. Zeke, what makes you think he's going back to Israel? Oh, he isn't? Well, my mistake then. I just figured. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just wondered why you figured that. I don't know. Somebody's got to go, and you guys have never wanted to risk Dr. Ben Judah. Somebody's got to go to Israel? Why? Zeke furrowed his brow. I don't know. You can tell me if I'm wrong, because a lot of times I am, but Dad says I've got intuition. I try to figure out Zion's messages each day, but like I say, reading's not my thing. I don't think I ever read a book all the way through, except maybe a parts manual, and then only over about 6 years. But Zion makes those daily message things pretty easy to understand for a smart guy. I'm saying he's smart, not me. Most smart guys think they're explaining something, but they're the only ones who understand it, you know what I mean? Sure. Well, what I'm getting from Zion lately is that Carpathia is up to something, and it has to do with Jerusalem. Zion says the Bible says the Antichrist is not only going to pull a fast one on the Jews, he's also going to brag about it right in their own temple and defile it somehow and break his promise. I think you've pretty much got that down, Zeke. How does Chaim play into it? Zion says God's preparing a safe place for the Jews to run off to, but they got to have a leader. Zion can lead them on the net, but they need somebody there, somebody they can see. He's got to be Jewish, he's got to be a believer, he's got to be popular, at least able to get people to follow him, and he's got to know a lot of stuff. The only person that's going to know more than Zion pretty soon will be Chaim, and no way I think Zion's going over there. It's just as dangerous for Chaim, isn't it, Zeke? Well, I don't know who'd be worse in Carpathia's mind, the guy who's telling the whole world Carpathia's the devil himself, or the guy what ran a sword through his brain. But the fact is us believers could probably get along without Chaim if we had to, but we're in trouble without Zion. Zeke looked troubled for having said it. Rayford stood and paced. Well, Zeke, your dad's right about your intuition. You've hit this nail on the head.
Then I'm going to be asked to help send him over there as... What's his new name?
Tobias Rogoff.
Right, as him?
You are.
Don't you think a lot of people will recognize his voice and his body type? People notice hands, too. I might have to work on that.
Yes, there will be people who know right away who he is. And if David is right that there's tape showing him murdering Carpathia, I can see the GC showing that to the world. But Carpathia himself has already pardoned his attacker.
But Carpathia also said he can't control what other citizens might do to the guy, so Chaim would be living on borrowed time, don't you think?
If he can get to the safe haven with the Jews, I think he will be supernaturally protected.
That would be cool.
You said you weren't a plastic surgeon. Are there less invasive ways to change someone's appearance?
Zeke nodded.
There's dental gizmos.
Appliances.
Right. I used one on Leah, and I've got plenty more. We can really change the look of a man's teeth and jaw.
How about one whose jaw is wired shut?
Even better. Leah's going to take out those wires soon. I think we can make him look like somebody else. Then he has to dress different than he ever has, maybe walk different. I can get him to do that just by adding a little something to one of his shoes. I'll be ready when he is.
David dealt with his grief by working every waking moment and then crashing hard till he had no choice but to sleep. He assigned Mac and Abdullah the task of planning their disappearance as conceived by Hannah. Meanwhile, he planted far and wide in the complex access numbers that would allow him, with the right keystrokes, to hack into the system and monitor the goings-on as fully as he was able to do now, at least for as long as the current system was used. David found listening in on Nikolai and Leon and Hickman almost addictive, but he also enjoyed hearing what Security Chief Walter Moon had to say. While it was unlikely Moon would become a believer, who could know for sure? If he did, it would have to be before the initiation of the mark on employees, because, as Tzion taught, Scripture was clear that that was a once-and-for-all decision. But Moon, from what David could gather, shared openly with both his assistant and his most trusted subordinate that he believed he had been overlooked for the role of Supreme Commander. He spent most of his time swearing, ironically, on a stack of Bibles that he wouldn't have taken the job if it had been offered. But the opposite was so obviously and patently true that even his confidants felt free to tell him, of course you would have, and it should have gone to you. David daydreamed of having Moon on his side, a grouser within the palace who had the potential for subversion. The new intelligence director replacing Jim Hickman was a Pakistani named Suhail Akbar. A devout Carpathia supporter, he was a behind-the-scenes kind of guy, quiet and slow to voice an opinion, but with a resume that far outstripped his former superiors for experience and training. David feared he was bright enough to be a problem. Bright was not an adjective ever applied to Hickman. It is crucial, David emailed Mac one afternoon following a heavy day of hacking and setup for a future of the same, that we leave no room for questioning our loyalty to the GC and to Carpathia specifically. I challenge the brass occasionally for the very purpose of keeping them from suspecting me, and I believe they do suspect those who seem blindly loyal. I want them to ask themselves, why would Hasid challenge us and yet stay and serve so capably if he is not simply trying to make the place the best it can be? Mac, we have to plan ahead, plant the problem that will explain our demise and cost the GC some plum piece of equipment. I wouldn't mind seeing the plane go down with a few million nicks worth of biochip injectors and even loyalty enforcement facilitators. Wonder if guillotines are listed that way in the top-end head-chopping paraphernalia catalogs. Sorry for the gallows humor, it's no laughing matter. Praise God he can make glorified bodies even of those saints who have been dismembered, cremated, or lightning-struck. At the risk of insulting your intelligence, I must caution against even considering wasting the Phoenix 216. Much as I would love to tweak Carpathia's nose with the loss of his precious ride, we have way too much invested in the bugging system, which I am now able to access even from outside the plane. For whatever time God allows us the freedom to listen in, I can imagine no greater source of information. I have developed a program that can even track the position of the craft via satellite. It is always fun and enlightening, isn't it, when Nikolai thinks he's in a wholly secure environment and lets his hair down. The bluster and posturing among his people is one thing, but to hear him cackle and admit to his most trusted aides the very things he denies everywhere else, well, that's when it's worth it. Speaking of that, he has a meeting scheduled with Hickman, Moon, Akbar, and Fortunato that I plan to tape. If you think his go-rounds with just Leon were hilarious, wait till you hear this. I'll upload it to you. Remember the unique secure code for all this privileged information and secure transmissions. Should anyone, yourself included, try to access these files with the wrong code,
I have programmed in a bug so nasty that it really should be called a monster. This is a creature that ignores the software programs and attacks the hardware. If I hadn't developed it myself, I wouldn't have believed it. This thing will literally intercept the impulses being relayed from point to point in the processor, carry them to the power source, whether battery or AC, and draw the current into the motherboard itself. If there were an incendiary device in there, I could get a computer to literally blow up in a hacker's face. Given that all there is in there is plastic and metal, the best I can do is produce a lot of heat, smoke, and some melting. Regardless, the victim computer is irreparable after that. More later, confrère. I'll look for something concrete from you and Abdullah within 48 hours. Meanwhile, it's less obvious and risky for you to have occasion to run into Hannah than for me to. Keep her warm and courageous as a compatriot, and assure her that we will get out in time and have productive years left to devote to the cause of the kingdom. Rayford, who had been kept up to date by David once he was up and around again, worried about the calendar. He had been noodling the most effective roles for each member of the force, and the prospect of a sudden infusion of four members displaced from the palace had both its up and downsides. Were he to bring them all to Chicago, he would add to the base of operations two pilots, a nurse, and one of the world's greatest computer geniuses. Clearly he had the room, but he wondered if having virtually everybody in one place was the most efficient use of resources. Not just for their own psyches, but also for the sake of the two-pronged overall mission, stymieing Carpathia where possible and winning as many people to the kingdom as they could, it might make more sense to spread the talent around the globe. Hattie and Leah were restless and eager for assignments. Chloe was resigned to staying because of Kenny and the work of the co-op, but Buck needed live exposure to what was going on to make his cyberzine as effective as it could be. Rayford and Albie needed all the pilots they could get, but planes weren't plentiful either. If he and the insightful, if inarticulate Zeke were right about what Sion was up to, thousands of pilots and planes would have to be recruited from around the world to airlift Jewish believers to safety. Veteran pilots like Mac and Abdullah could help make that happen. But in an instant, in the middle of the night, Rayford went from thinking he had more than 2 weeks to think and plan how best to make use of the new Babylon contingent to realizing he had to act quickly. Time was a luxury he never had enough of, but an emergency threw everything into turmoil. Rayford's phone rang, but no one was there. He checked the readout. A message from Lucas Laszlo Miklos. "Have been found out," it read. "Pastor and my wife detained among others. Pray, please. Help, please." The underground church in Ptolemais was the largest in Greece and likely the largest in the United Carpathian States. Up to now, the local GC presence had not been a problem. The Greek believers had been careful, Rayford knew from personal experience, but even they feared GC security and intelligence sources could not look the other way much longer. Part of the reason they felt they had been ignored was that local GC leadership believed Carpathia wanted the region that bore his name to have the lowest reported incidence of insurgents of the 10 global supercommunities. Whatever public relations sensitivities Carpathia had exhibited before his assassination, since his resurrection his emphasis had been on enforcement. Apparently, Rayford deduced, the new Carpathia would rather eradicate the opposition within his own duchy than pretend it didn't exist. Rayford would ask David to check into the situation and see what would be served by a Trib Force party showing its face over there. Rayford had known Mrs. Miklos to be a quiet, deeply spiritual woman, but Laszlos had told him she was also opinionated, stubborn, and brave. She was not the type to back down if confronted over the exercise of her beliefs by those in authority. Rayford imagined the GC storming a meeting and Mrs. Miklos resisting and even putting up a fuss rather than allowing her pastor, Demetrius Demeter, to be taken into custody. But Rayford didn't want his imagination to run away with him. He would find out what he could from David and perhaps take a run over there with Albie. Or perhaps with Buck. He hated the idea of leaving the Trib Force without so much as a helicopter pilot. David was keying in his coordinates to listen to Carpathia's meeting with Hickman and the others when he got a call from Rayford regarding a GC versus underground church skirmish in Greece. "I'll let you know what I find out," he told Rayford. David phoned Walter Moon, but before Walter answered, David was surprised to be paged to Hickman's office. His office? Hickman shared space with Carpathia's assistant. And didn't Hickman have a meeting with Carpathia soon? David hung up and called Hickman. The assistant, Sandra, answered. "Hasid here, was I just paged?" "Yes, sir. The Supreme Commander would like you to meet with him in the conference room, 18th floor." David found a mess. Though the workday was moments from being over and Sandra was packing up to leave, workmen still jammed the area. Drills, saws, hammers, dust, scaffolds, ladders, materials everywhere. They're not going to relocate you while they're working? David said.
Apparently not, Sandra said, and she marched off.
Hickman opened the door to a conference room that was not long for this world and waved David in.
Hurry and let me get this door closed, you see? Less sawdust.
The new Supreme Commander, a Western version of Fortunato with even less class, offered a fleshy hand and shook David's enthusiastically.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? He has risen, huh?
Ha, huh, David said, and when Hickman shot him a double take, he added,
Indeed.
Hickman appeared nervous and in a hurry. David thought he could pry information from him by playing dumb.
So, just about the end of your day, huh? How's it been sharing space with...
Never mind that,
Hickman said, sitting and letting his generous belly push past his unbuttoned uniform jacket.
Got a meeting coming up with the big guys, and I'd rather not go in there unprepared.
That'll be the day, David thought.
How can I help? He said.
We all up to date, up to snuff, on track, on target, on course?
David shook his head, amazed. All of the above, I guess. What are we talking about? Hickman grabbed a dog-eared pad and rifled through a couple of pages.
Guillotines? Syringes?
You mean loyalty enforcement facilitators and biochip injectors?
Yeah, thanks, Hickman said, scribbling. I knew Viv had some special names for those. You know, Hasid, basically I was a cop. I'm honored and everything, but I gotta prove to His Majesty, His Excellency, that I can handle this, that I'm not in over my head.
You feel you are?
What I feel is that my loyalty and my devotion to the potentate will make up for any lack of experience I've had at this level of management. Now, where are we on these things? What can I tell him?
That we're on track, on pace.
Good. I can count on you, then.
Oh, can you ever, Supreme Commander?
You can call me Commander when it's just you and me. Keep it formal in public, of course.
Of course.
By the way, do you purchase livestock, too?
You mean foodstuffs? No, that would be food services.
No, this is live. I don't need food. I need a live animal.
Still not my area, I'm afraid. Rolling stock, avionics, computers, communications hardware, that's my game.
Who's going to help me procure a pig?
A pig, sir?
Huge and live, Hasid.
I have no idea. Hickman stared at him, apparently not accepting the dodge.
I could look into it, David said.
But I knew I could count on you, David. Good man. Let me know first thing in the morning, because the word I get is that the big man's going to sign me that today.
Oh, you haven't even heard from him about it yet?
No, this is what you'd call a heads up from a colleague who cares.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Guy like me tends to accumulate friends all up and down the corporate ladder. Buddy told me today he was in on a meeting with Fortunato and
Oh, forgive me, I know better than that.
I should never use those names, especially in front of a subordinate. I'm going to direct you to disregard that, Hasid, as your superior officer.
Jury will disregard, sir.
Yeah, good. Anyhow, this guy's in a meeting with His Excellency and the Most High Reverend, and he says they're agitated. You know what that means? Exercised, I guess you'd say.
Understood, Commander.
They're upset, up in arms, whatever you want to call it, about the Judahites.
I've heard of them, sir.
I know you have. Their top guy, who peacekeeping thought they'd flushed out and sent packing, turns up now in a new place. We don't know where, which doesn't have the potentate any too cheery, if you know what I mean. And this Judah guy is turning out more and more of this anti-Carpathian... Well, I guess, yeah, it's okay in that context. This guy's disseminating anti-Carpathian stuff everywhere. He's predicting and says the Holy Bible prophesies that Antichrist, which is what he calls His Excellency, imagine, is going to defile the temple and sacrifice a pig on the altar.
You don't say.
I do say, and while I wasn't there, my buddy tells me the potentate is fiery mad. I mean, he's hopping.
I can imagine.
Me too. He says to the Reverend, he says something along the lines of, oh yeah, well, maybe I will show them. You know how he talks, never using contractions and like that.
I do.
So, and this is the genius of Nikolai Carpathia, if you'll forgive the familiar reference. He's gonna like, get this, fulfill this prophecy. The one in the Bible and the one by Ben-Judahite or,
Zion Ben-Judah.
Right. He's going to sacrifice a pig on the altar of the temple in Jerusalem on purpose, knowing what the guy and the Holy Bible are saying. Sort of in your face, wouldn't you say?
That's for sure. In God's face, no less.
Well, see, I don't know this yet, you follow?
Sure, it's on the QT from your buddy.
Exactly. But when he, you know, who asked me, can I get him a pig, I want to be able to tell him no problem. Can I tell him that? You're going to check with your people or whatever, and I'm going to get him this pig, right?
I'll do my best, sir.
I knew you would. Hot dog, you're good.
You said that on purpose, didn't you, sir?
What's that?
Talking about a pig and you said hot dog?
Hickman disintegrated into gales of laughter, then tried to pretend he had indeed said it on purpose. When he regained control, he said, "You know what I want, Hasid? Tell me.
I want a pig. Are you ready?"
"I'm ready."
"Big enough for His Excellency to ride."
"Sir?"
"You heard me. I want the biggest pig you've ever seen in your life. Big as a pony. Big enough to put a saddle on. Not literally, but you know what I mean."
"Not sure I do, Commander."
"I'm trying to earn a few points here, understand, Director, just like you're doing without trying, because you're just that good. But I won't be able to suggest to His Excellency that if he's going to take the gloves off and go toe-to-toe with his worst enemies, he ought to go on one better."
"Take the gloves off to go toe-to-toe. Annie would have loved that mixed metaphor. One better?"
"He ought to ride that pig into the temple."
"Oh, my."
David could not imagine Carpathia, even at his basest, lowering himself to such a spectacle.
"Oh, my, is right, Hasid. You read the Bible?"
"Ever?"
"Yeah,
some."
"Well, isn't there a story about Jesus riding in Jerusalem on a donkey and people singing and throwing leaves and whatnot?"
"I was raised Jewish."
"So, no New Testament for you. Well, anyway, there is that story, I'm pretty sure. Picture His Excellency having fun with that, riding a pig with people paid to sing and throw stuff."
"Lord, please. I can't imagine."
"I can come up with him, can't I, Hasid?"
"You can, sir."
"Hey, I'd better get in there. Get on that pig for me, will you? I'm going to tell him it's as good as got."
"I'll let you know."
David was on his way out the door when Hickman called after him. "I forgot to tell you," he said, turning pages on his pad again.
"There's a gal in medical services, a nurse. Here it is, she used to be a vet or something, and she shot biochips into dogs and cats."
"You don't say," David said.
"You might want to check her out, see if we can take advantage of her expertise, you know, in training people how to do this."
"I'll check her out. What's the name?"
"I don't think I have it right, I see. It's some kind of funny name. You'll be able to track her down."
"I'll ask for the nurse with the funny name, sir."
Chapter 12. Rayford couldn't sleep. Pacing various floors in the cavernous strong building, he happened by Chaim's room. The door was wide open, and in the darkness he noticed the old man's silhouette. Chaim sat motionless on the bed, though Rayford knew he had to hear and see him in the corridor. Rayford poked his head in.
"You all right, Dr. Rosenzweig?"
A loud sigh through the wire-bound, clenched teeth.
"I don't know, my friend."
"Want to talk?" A low chuckle.
"You know my culture. Talk is what we do. If you have time, come in. I welcome you."
Rayford pulled up a chair and sat facing Chaim in the darkness. The botanist seemed in no hurry. Finally he said,
"The young woman takes my wire out tomorrow."
"Leah, yes. You can't tell me you're worried about that."
"I can hardly contain myself waiting."
"But something else is on your mind." Chaim fell silent again, but soon he began panting, then leaned to his pillow where he was racked with great sobs. Rayford pulled his chair closer and lay a hand on the man's shoulder. "Talk to me."
"I have lost so much,"
Chaim wailed, and Rayford strained to understand him.
"My family, my staff, and it is all my fault."
"Little is our fault anymore, sir. Carpathia is in charge of everything now."
"But I was so proud, so skeptical. Zion and Cameron and Chloe and you and everyone who cared about me warned me, tried to persuade me. But oh no, I was too intellectual. I knew better."
"But you came to the Lord, Chaim. We must not live in the past when all things have become new."
"But look where I was not that long ago. Zion is joyful in spite of it all, so happy for me, so encouraging. I dare not tell him where my mind is."
"Where is it?"
"I am guilty, Captain Steele. I could do as you say, put the past behind me if all I was dealing with was my pride and ignorance. But it led me down paths I never believed I would walk. My dearest, most trusted friends are dead because of me, slaughtered in my house."
Rayford resisted platitudes. "We have all lost much," he whispered. "Two wives and a son for me, many friends. Too many to think about or I'd go mad."
Chaim sat up again, wiping his face with both hands.
That is my problem, Rayford. I have gone nearly mad with grief, but mostly remorse. I murdered a man. I know he is Antichrist and that he was destined to die and come back to life, but I didn't know that when I committed the act. I murdered a man who had betrayed my homeland and me. Murder! Think of it! I was a beloved statesman, yet I stooped to assassination.
I understand rage, Chaim. I wanted to murder Carpathia myself, and I knew exactly who he was and that he would not stay dead.
But I premeditated it, Captain, planned it many months in advance, virtually invented and manufactured the weapon myself, faked a stroke just to get myself in proximity to him without suspicion, then finished the job exactly as I had envisioned it. I am a murderer.
Rayford leaned forward and rested his elbows on his knees, head in his hands. You know, I almost saved you the work.
I don't understand.
You heard a gunshot before you attacked Carpathia.
Yes.
My gun.
I don't believe you.
Rayford told him the story of his own anger, personality change, plotting, the purchase of the weapon, his determination to do the deed. Chaim sat, shaking his head.
I can hardly believe that the two people who dared attack Nikolai are in the same room. But in the end, you could not do it. I did it with enthusiasm, and even up to the time I finally saw my need for God, I was glad I did it. Now I suffer such regret and shame I can barely breathe.
Can you take no solace in the fact that this was destiny and that you cannot be guilty of murdering a man who is alive?
Solace? I would give all I own for a moment of peace. It isn't whom I did this to, Rayford. It is that I did it. I did not know the depth of my own wickedness.
And yet, God has saved you.
Tell me, is one supposed to feel forgiven?
Good question. I have faced the same dilemma. I have full faith in the power of God to forgive and forget, to separate us from our sins as far as the east is from the west. But I'm human, too. I don't forget, and thus often I don't appropriate the forgiveness God extends. Because we feel guilty does not mean God did not have the power to absolve us.
But Zion tells me I may have a greater destiny, that I just might be the one to be used to lead my believing countrymen to safety from Antichrist. How could he say that, and how could I do such a thing when I feel the way I do?
Rayford stood. Perhaps the fallacy is in thinking it would have to be you who accomplishes this.
I would love to be out from under the weight of it, but as Zion says, who else? He himself cannot risk it.
I'm saying it's something God is going to do through you.
But who am I? A scientist. I am not eloquent. I don't know the word of God. I barely know God. I was not even a religious Jew until just days ago.
Yet, as a child, you must have been exposed to the Torah.
Of course.
If Zion is right, and not even he is sure, this could be your burning bush experience.
No one will ever see me as Moses.
Are you willing to let God use you? Because if Zion is right, and you do what he thinks you should do, you would be a modern-day Moses.
Ah!
You could be used of God to flee the evil ruler and take your people to a safe haven. Chaim moaned and lay down again. Moses pled the same case you're pleading, Rayford said. The question is whether you are willing.
I know.
You're right. You were depraved. We all were. Until Christ saved us, God can make a miracle of your life. Chaim mumbled. I'm sorry, Rayford said.
I said I want to be willing. I am willing to be willing.
That's a start.
But God is going to have to do something in me.
He already has.
But more. I could no more accept this assignment now than I could fly. The person who accepts this duty must have a clear conscience, confidence that comes only from God, and communication ability far beyond what I have ever possessed. I was able to hold forth in a classroom, but to speak to thousands, as Zion has done, to publicly oppose Antichrist himself, to rally the masses to do what is right, I don't see it. I just don't.
But you are willing to trust God to work.
He is my only hope. I am at the end of myself.
At high noon, Carpathia time in New Babylon, David left the palace and went outside for the first time in days. He was to have his stitches removed at 2 that afternoon, and he looked forward to seeing Hannah Palemoon again, even in a sterile setting where they might not be able to converse freely. The heat reminded David of the day of Nikolai's resurrection. It didn't seem right to stroll the grounds of the spectacular palace without Annie. His pain was so raw and the ache so deep that it made his scalp wound fade to insignificance. Hannah had told him that the removal of the bandage would be worse than the removal of the stitches. His uniform cap protected the wound from the sun, but David's body began to heat up in his dress uniform, and the memories of his trauma floated back. The decimation of the world's population was reflected in the workforce at GC headquarters. What had once been its own bustling metropolis was now a shell of itself. The crowds that used to consist of enthusiastic employees were now made up of tourists and pilgrims, necks craned to catch a glimpse of someone famous. In the distance, David saw visitors crowded around one of the outdoor TV monitors that broadcast GC News 24 hours a day. He moseyed over and stood unnoticed at the back. The new Most High Reverend of Carpathianism, Leon Fortunato, held forth from his new office. David could only shake his head. Leon stood before a pulpit-type lectern, but his height had seemed to change. A husky, swarthy man, a tick under 6 feet tall, Leon wore a long burgundy and navy robe that flattered his physique. But when the late Peter Matthews, in a gaudy, silly-looking robe, had stood at the same podium, he had looked shorter than Leon, despite that he was several inches over 6 feet. Leon had to be standing on some sort of box or platform. He reported on the worldwide competition to see which locales and regions led in the race to complete their replicas of the Carpathia statue. Of course, the United Carpathian States had an insurmountable lead, but the rest of the world competed for second place. The report was dotted with feeds from all over the globe, showing how many communities had tried to make unique their version of the statue. Regulations stipulated that the replicas had to be at least life-size and monochromatic, but none could be as large as the original. Past that, local committees were free to exercise creativity. Most of the statues were black, but many were gold, some crystal, some fiberglass, one green, one orange, and several were twice life-size, or half the size of the original. Fortunato seemed particularly pleased with those two and announced plans to personally visit those sites. In the interest of full disclosure, it falls to me to report that while Israel has several replica statues in cities as disparate as Haifa and Tel Aviv, Jerusalem has not even begun theirs. Leon switched into his deep bass, solemn voice. Speaking under the authority of the risen potentate, I say woe, woe and beware to the enemies of the Lord of this globe who would thumb their noses in the face of the Most High. Here he switched to Uncle Leon mode, sounding like a beloved relative reading a bedtime story. But you know, while I have been imbued with power from on high to perform all the miracles that our beloved leader performs, and whereas I have proven this power by calling down fire from heaven to destroy the disloyal, your Lord, His Excellency, is the embodiment of love and forgiveness and long-suffering. Against my counsel and better judgment, though I defer to his divine wisdom, the supreme potentate has asked me to announce that he knows he has devout followers in the capital of the Holy Land. Their loving Lord shall not forget those loyal pilgrims, suffering under the insanity and subversion of the very leaders who have been charged with responsibility for the spiritual health of their souls. 1 week from today, the object of our adoration shall personally visit his children in Jerusalem. He will be there, not only to deal forthrightly with those who oppose him, for he is, besides being a loving God, a just God, but also to bless and accept worship and praise from the citizens otherwise without voice. As your global pastor, let me urge the countless oppressed Carpathianists living under the thumb of misguided rebels in Jerusalem to bravely show your support to the one worthy of all honor and glory when he arrives in your home city. May it be a triumphal entry like none before it.
Let me, on his behalf, personally guarantee your safety and protection against any form of retribution you might otherwise have suffered for your doing the right thing in the face of powerful opposition. We know that the leadership there has a thin majority of Judahites and Orthodox Jews who risk the vengeance of their God by continuing with their suicidal lunacy. Unless they see the error of their ways and come on bent knee to beg forgiveness of their Lord, new leadership will be in place before His Excellency leaves that great city. And to those who swear that the temple is off-limits to the potentate himself, I say, dare not come against the army of the Lord of Hosts. He is a god of peace and reconciliation, but thou shalt have no other gods before him. There shall not be erected or allowed to stand any house of worship anywhere on this planet that does not recognize His Excellency as its sole object of devotion. Nikolai Carpathia, the potentate, is risen! The crowd around the TV shouted the customary response, and David said silently, Jesus the Christ is risen indeed. Fortunato reminded the world that within 2 days all statues must be completed and open for worship. And, as you know, the first 100 cities with finished and approved units will be the first to be awarded loyalty mark application centers. Leon had aides bring into view a flip chart he could reach from whatever he was standing on, and David noticed that as they came into view, his proximity made him look 7 feet tall. Fortunato used a pointer to show the standard mark application facility. It contained a staging area where several thousand at a time would be herded through crowd control barriers, entertained by taped speeches from Carpathia and Fortunato. Every 4 minutes, a replay would show Fortunato's calling down fire from heaven on dissidents and Carpathia's actual resurrection. He paused to let the tape roll, and David had to look away. The tourists cheered the broadcast. Fortunato returned to his demonstration drawing. The citizens would feed into a dozen or 2 dozen open-air booths, depending on the size of the city and the crowd, where they would be asked to decide on the design and size of their mark and whether they wanted it on their foreheads or the backs of their right hands. A friendly reminder, Fortunato said with a grin, should you procrastinate on your decision or forget due to your excitement, the standard injection will be made on your right hand, depicting the prefix that identifies your region, next to the thin scar that evidences injection of the biochip. We have been asked repeatedly how we are precluding counterfeit marks. While it may be impossible for any but highly skilled and trained observers to tell a fake mark from the real, biochip scanners cannot be fooled. We are so confident of the 100% reliability of this technology that anyone whose biochip is not authenticated by a scanner will be subject to execution without appeal. A readable, implanted biochip will be required for standard trade and commerce. And yes, we will have loyalty enforcement facilitators at every mark application site. To David's surprise, this announcement was illustrated by footage of a huge, gleaming guillotine, and Fortunato actually punctuated it with a hearty laugh. I can't imagine any citizen of the global community having to worry about such a device unless he or she is still mired in the cult of the Judahites or Orthodox Judaism. Frankly, only the blind or those without access to television have not seen the resurrection of our God and ruler, so I can't imagine skeptics remain outside Jerusalem. Well, as you can see, and he laughed again, they will not remain long. Fortunato then hefted a huge stack of letters and printouts. These, my friends, are applications from those who want to be first to show their loyalty to His Excellency by proudly having their marks applied right here in New Babylon. Any citizen from any region may have his or her mark applied here, though the code number will coincide with your home region. There is a limit to the number we can accommodate, so get your application in quickly or plan to have yours applied in your local center. Does the application hurt? It does not. With technology so advanced and local anesthesia so effective, you will feel only the pressure of the biochip inserter. By the time any discomfort would have passed, the anesthetic will still be working. Bless you, my friends, in the name of our risen Lord and Master, His Excellency, the Potentate, Nikolai Carpathia. Rayford returned to his bed, drowsier but still unable to sleep. He spent an hour noodling assignments for the force and finally concluded that Albie and Buck ought to go to Greece. He needed to stay for the sake of morale, and Buck needed to be able to expose the closed-mindedness of the Carpathia regime. With that settled, Rayford drifted off, planning to get Buck yet another new ID from Zeke in the morning and assign David a little more way-paving from his perch in New Babylon. David informed the head of food service that Supreme Commander Hickman had need of the largest live pig available for Carpathia's Israel visit. Then he stopped in his office to check his computer before his appointment with Hannah. He found an urgent email from Ming Toy. "I did not know whom else to write to," she said. "I was distraught to hear of your loss, and can only pray God's strength for you. I cannot imagine your pain. Mr. Hasid, have you seen my family since I left there? Last I heard they had not seen you. I am most troubled. They have been awarded free accommodations until Chang has been processed for employment, and my father is thrilled beyond words. Mother is silent, as usual, but I have heard directly from Chang, and he is desperate. He says the last thing he wants is to work for the GC, yet my father insists. Having his son serve Carpathia is the highest honor he can imagine. Chang has heard that all employees will receive the mark within a few weeks, but there is a rumor that new employees hired during this time may be the first to have it applied. Have you heard that? Could it be true? It makes sense in its own way. Why hire someone without knowing up front that they are loyal, and it saves their losing work time later just to stand in line for their marks? Father is insistent that Chang initiate his paperwork through personnel immediately and is eager to see him among the very first to take the mark, especially if Father can witness this himself. Chang is ready to admit to my father that he is a believer in Jesus, and yes, could accurately be